I'm Matthew Campelli and welcome to episode 85 of the Sustainability Report podcast, your guide to sustainability leadership, innovation and strategy in the sports industry. This week, we continue our odyssey through sport and nature, exploring a really interesting project from Denmark that blends biodiversity and motorsport. When Copenhagen Business School student Lorenzo Sacchetti was given the task of developing a biodiversity pilot project for the Dansk Automobile Sports Union, he was a bit surprised. How does motorsport fit with nature? But with the support of his friend Mathilde Montagna, a biodiversity specialist, his tutor Rikke Albertsen, and Michelle Skov, project manager for the Dansk Automobile Sports Union, also known as DASU, Lorenzo put together a plan that, if approved, could pave the way to a wider biodiversity strategy for the organization. In this podcast, Lorenzo, Mathilde, Rikke, and Michelle tell that story. Enjoy the show.
The initial prompt that we had was, I think, how can DASU improve its biodiversity impact? And so we quickly got to the conclusion that focusing on one specific racetrack would be best, first to be able to have more concrete deliverables, right? And second, to be able to then extrapolate the learnings that we had from this like pilot project to other racetracks, of course, because DASU has 90 racetracks all across Denmark. And of course, our goal is to be able to implement some kind of biodiversity strategy for a large part of them. The deliverables that we did at the end, they complete, were first of all a budget for this pilot project. So we really set out how much everything is going to cost to plant, to maintain, manpower, you know, how much the tools are going to cost. So we had a very detailed budget first. We, of course, made a plan. So, you know, what kind of plants should we plant? When should we plant them? Who should do this? So a very detailed plan also on the long term on how to improve the biodiversity on this specific racetrack, which is located on Amma, so the island next to Copenhagen. And then third, we also worked on involving the community because that was also a part of the, let's say, of the brief that we were given by DASU to involve the community, the local community around the racetrack. So what we did was we contacted many schools or other youth organizations such as the Boy Scouts on Amma, and we managed to find one primary school that agreed to work with us so that kids could come to the racetrack to learn about the biodiversity efforts that were being conducted there and also help, for example, by planting or maintaining the seedlings or the trees and so on and so forth.
How did you feel when you were told to do something around biodiversity and motorsport? What was your response when you were giving a topic like this?
Well, I think even in the project brief, it said that biodiversity and motorsports are often not mentioned in the same breath. And I completely agree because I've never thought of motorsports as the most sustainable type of sport, if I'm being honest, obviously, because I mean, it consists of driving cars quite quickly or driving, you know, different vehicles quite quickly over, you know, not roads, but tracks that are being made specifically for this, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of both from a, you know, exhaust point of view, but also from a, you know, what the land is being used for that, you know, that you're using for motorsports. To me, it's at first thought quite unsustainable. But at the same time, if you think that these areas also have quite a lot of green parts, right? So all around the asphalt, right? Much of it is grass. And the fact that it's just not being used as much, especially because these racetracks, of course, are not like normal roads where, you know, cars are driving all the time, all day long, every single day of the week. You know, these are tracks, or these are roads, if you want to call it like that, that are used quite little, right? They're mm-hmm. only used on the weekends. There are quite a lot of restrictions. You cannot drive go-karts, you know, at 2 a.m. or something. You have all these areas, these green areas that are not really being used and have a lot of potential.
So, Rikke, were you behind the project brief?
Well, what I did was I reached out to DASU when I started teaching the class because, yeah, believe it or not, they're actually one of the federations that are probably the furthest ahead in terms of thinking sustainability, also because they are the ones that are getting pressured the most from, you know, from their sponsors and their funders. They do realize that if they're going to justify their existence in the future, they really need to have a look at you know, how are they actually conducting their sports? So they're doing a lot of work, also looking into biofuels, looking into e-go-karts. And this idea about, you know, biodiversity on the racetracks is just so, like, once you think about it, it makes so much sense, because these are, you know, huge green areas that really, as Lorenzo said, aren't being used that much, but nobody ever really thought about that they could become like a, you know, a biodiversity driver of their local community. It was such an interesting project, and I was really excited to get this group working on it, because they had a lot of expertise that they could really use to create a very concrete, you know, pilot project that could be really helpful for DASU, because a lot of times it's all about, okay, we have the ideas, we have the will to try to do something, but what do we actually do?
Michelle, from DASU's point of view, why are topics like this important? Why is biodiversity at the top of your list from a sustainability point of view?
Like Reki said, we have to look into, we have some pressure for our sponsor. And in DASU, we have a strategy. So we have two strategies, actually. So motorsport takes climate responsibility, and motorsport takes social responsibility. So actually, in this project, it's both the strategy in one, because we taking care of the climate and social responsibility as well, because we are including schools and stuff like that. So we want to do something good with the sport.
So Lorenzo, you were given the brief to do this project. DASU obviously really invested, really interested in getting some help. But your first step was to get some expert advice for the project. And that's where Matilda, I suppose, you came into the project.
So what we did was, well, first, we didn't involve experts right away, I have to say. So we had our own ideas of, you know, what could it mean to improve biodiversity and the AMA, around the AMA racetrack. Very quickly, we had our ideas, and then we realized, okay, you know, these might make sense, but I'm sure there's more that we can do, or maybe some things actually don't make sense, right? And either way, even if those ideas were like really good as well, because most things were confirmed by other people, right? Like Matilda and others, we still wanted to have we wanted to be supported by opinions that, in our opinion, mattered more than our own in terms of biodiversity.
Sure, but before we move on to Matilda, maybe Lorenzo, to give us some context, can you tell us about some of those ideas that you formulated before getting expert advice?
When we thought about, okay, how can we improve the biodiversity impact that DASU has around this racetrack, we thought, okay, we have this basically empty plot of land that's basically just grassland with a few shrubs and a couple of trees. What can we do? So then we thought, okay, we can plant trees around the perimeter. We can change the composition of the grass covering, right, which was just plain green grass, to make it more like a flowery meadow to increase the impact it has on pollination. We can install birdhouses so that birds can, I don't know, feel more welcome in this area and plant more trees, and also improve, in this case, fauna biodiversity. And we also thought about planting some shrubs that have a lot of, that in the spring give a lot of flowers as well, to further increase pollination in the area.
And then Matilda, I guess you came in and you confirmed some of those ideas were good, but also gave some other expert advice on how they could be improved.
Yes, exactly. So Lorenzo contacted me, and together with Mona Merkle, a colleague of mine, we provided some help. And yes, we confirmed that in general, heterogeneity in the structure of the landscape, it's very important also to provide and support more biodiversity in terms of vegetation, but also in terms of animal diversity, being interconnected, of course. So providing different grassland areas as well as different structures as bushes or trees, it increases the diversity in the sense that it attracts different type of species. And it also has an effect on the soil diversity, which is also very important to consider, especially in grassland areas. We confirmed mainly some ideas of Lorenzo and his team. And we provided also a few other insights in the concept of biodiversity itself, which I think it's very important also to truly understand. It's not just the number of species in a specific area. It's also the abundance of the different species. It's also the type of species, whether they are unique or rather common. all these aspects have to be considered as well while managing areas and trying to increase or to put some value on the biodiversity of the specific area.
Well, that's a really good point, because some people may feel that biodiversity and looking after nature is, particularly when it comes to, again, climate mitigation as well, is about tree planting, and that's the extent of a lot of people's knowledge in sport when it comes to issues like nature and biodiversity. But Matilda, how do you go about, you know, analysing a piece of land or an area to start, you know, putting in place plans around biodiversity? What kind of things do you need to take into consideration? Because I suppose, so this one particular trek will have some certain characteristics, but of the 90 treks belong under the kind of DASU umbrella, there'll be different characteristics. So you can't have the same plan for each site. You know, how would you begin that assessment?
So first of all, I did not see the treks. So I'm really just giving some general indications of how we would assess biodiversity of a specific area. One important thing to consider, I think, to start is the landscape, the type of habitat, the type of soil that you can find in the specific area, because this is also the climate of the area, because it really reflects the type of vegetation that you find. And it also reflects then the type of community that will build on this type of vegetation. So already understanding, for example, the soil of a specific area, it's critical to understand what type of vegetation can also be found there. And then, of course, there is the more like basic, not basic activity, it's actually the most time-consuming activity, which is identifying the different species that can be found, of course, also depending on the species group. So starting from plants, grass types, bushes, trees, but also, of course, if you go on the fauna level, type of insects, type of birds, and it may also involve different experts, because not everybody is an expert of everything. And yes, and then based on this, also understanding the communities, vegetation communities, so which species can be found together or not. This is also important to consider to evaluate the uniqueness or the importance of a specific habitat, because of course the value of an ecosystem, of an habitat, it's also based on the species that you can find and the how rare they are in relationship to the rest of the landscape.
And then Lorenzo, once you got this assessment, you spoke to other experts. What did that look like?
Yeah, actually, just to complement what Matilda just talked about, we actually talked also with Matilda and with Mona. We actually talked a lot also about so our community involvement, like that kind of deliverable, right? So what can people do? How can we involve communities under the topic of biodiversity at these racetracks, right? So we asked our experts like Matilda, okay, what can we do? What do you think are biodiversity-related activities that children can do, right? So, you know, primary school children, so, you know, rather young, or maybe also older children or students of local schools or youth groups. So that was also really helpful in that way. The experts we talked about were in the areas of biodiversity, right? So we were really asking them, okay, you know, what kind of trees were planted, you know, how can we measure biodiversity and so on and so forth. So we talked about that. We also talked to experts in terms of for the youth groups, right? So we talked about to different primary school teachers, such as Michela actually as well, right? Because she was actually a primary school teacher in the past. We also talked to a lot of other primary schools in the area, to Boy Scout leaders. I mean, this is, of course, the old one on the team, right? I didn't talk, for example, to the Boy Scouts myself. Mm-hmm. And then finally, another teammate of mine actually also talked to a gardener, right? So he, of course, also knows about biodiversity, but we talked to him to better understand the feasibility of what we wanted to do, right? So just to say, okay, to ask him questions, first of all, how much would it cost to plant an X trees? How much time will that take? Is that something that children can help with, or is it, you know, or is that completely unrealistic? By talking to all these people, we wanted to ensure that the ideas that we had and that we, you know, also collected from other people were feasible and realistic. So all the plans that we had, the activities that we talked about with Matilde, for example, we then gave back to the primary school teachers and said, is this something that you can imagine doing with your kids? or not really.
Okay, so bringing to that social and environmental aspect that Michelle was talking about. But my understanding, Michelle, there are some other practical things to consider in a project like this. For example, I understand that some of the tracks, or maybe all of the tracks, are owned by a municipality owned as well. So there are other stakeholders to take into account on projects like this.
Yeah, we have not that many race tracks that is owned by the municipalities, but that's on AMA is. So many places we actually own the ground ourselves, or they do. But here we have to work with the commune. But Lorenzo and the team was very helpful that actually they contacted the commune and they in this project. But in other projects, in other tracks, we don't have to ask permission by the commune.
Okay, so if you do roll out a wider biodiversity strategy, then it, in some respects you have control over that rather than so this must be a more complicated challenge because, like you say, you have to get buy-in from the local authority. How did those conversations go, Lorenzo?
Those conversations went well in terms of because the outcome was rather positive because we had they were enthusiastic about our project and they agreed that we would be able to do this. Ultimately, though, it was sometimes a bit hard to get like the final proof and the final, stamp of approval because, of course, we devised this project of planting, for example, a couple of trees around the perimeter of the area. But since the land is owned by the municipality and only, leased or, used by DASU, they have the final say of what can be done and what can't be done on the area, which is why we wanted to get a written agreement, which was hard to do in the limited amount of time that we had, which was just a couple of months. Some of the difficulties that we encountered were, for example, that there was this, I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but, this kind of typical public sector thing of, oh, yeah, I'm not really responsible for this. And, who should we ask? Yeah, I don't really know my boss. I'll let him know. And then, so we were kind of wondering, okay, I mean, managing this plot of land on AMA is not, the most time consuming job. And it still felt like there were, 15 people involved that we should talk to. But besides that, they were, quite positive and responsive and also took the time to meet with us multiple times as well, which I mean, is also to be appreciated. Yeah. I just hope that they, give the actual final approval so that the project can concretely be done.
Okay, this is interesting because this stems into a wider thing about sport and environment, sport for development. Because often we talk about it being the responsibility of the actual federations or the clubs, but there are other important stakeholders like municipalities. And what Lorenzo is saying is that while they're being supportive and being friendly and helpful, that there can be some friction at times. Things can go a little bit slowly. It can be difficult. How should people trying to implement sustainability within sport? How can they navigate these waters, do you think?
I think, just from anyone listening to this conversation, this description of all the steps involved, I think it really teaches us something about the kinds of competences we should be looking for in the people, trying to devise these projects, because this is a multi-stakeholder project. And what you really need to have to do this is a lot of persistence and basically people skills, because then you go to the teacher, you ask them, you go to an expert, you ask them, then you talk to each other, find out, would this be okay? Then you talk to the municipality people like 10 times before you actually get them to say yes. And you need to actually love this process, right? You need to somehow find a challenge in getting all these pieces to fit together, because also like some amazing synergies kind of arose. Like I remember reading in their final project that, the school was like, well, we actually have the, the tools and the capabilities. The children can build the birdhouses, and this could save them money. So, and the fact that you actually don't have to cut the grass all the time would actually save some, some labor. But it's like you have to find like some joy in finding these synergies and getting people to actually work together. And I think it's like this for a lot of sustainability projects, is that there's a lot of moving parts that you need to actually fit together. And if you as a sports federation think that this is like a, a desk job where you could just kind of, write a plan and a report and then carry it out, then you'll be very disappointed, because you realize that it's super messy and there's a lot of people involved. And that's just the nature of it. So when you when you write that ad for the person you're going to hire to do this, you better describe the real job. So, you know, so everybody knows what they're going into.
Yeah, totally. Lorenzo, you talked earlier on about devising a budget as well, and actually putting this together from a budgetary point of view, because one of the key barriers that people who are trying to push sustainability agenda in sport find is that there's often not a budget for projects like this. How did you find your experience was putting together the budget and trying to put it together, I guess, in the most optimal way?
We put the budget together, right? And we did this by devising first the plan and then think, okay, what is all needed for the plan? So we need the trees, we need, you know, the gardener who plants the trees, or at least oversees the planting done by schools, for example. You know, we need the maintenance and so on and so forth. So we just, you know, wrote down all things that needed to be done or needed to be purchased, both from, an upfront cost and also from a, you know, recurring maintenance point of view. And then we just did a lot of research in terms of how much is this going to cost, right? So we talked to the gardener, we actually called a lot of gardening centers to ask, okay, how much are these trees going to cost, and so on and so forth. And we devised, you know, the ultimate budget both from a initial point of view and both from from a maintenance point of view, so recurring on a yearly basis. We also worked a lot on finding funding for this project, because I'm not sure how many funds Dazu has to finance, you know, this project, and especially, you know, the other projects that we hope are going to turn out from this as well at different racetracks. But we found some Danish funds, I guess you can call them, that finance these types of projects. And we had also some preliminary positive feedback that funding for this could be really, you know, achieved, I guess. And we actually also developed a reduced budget, because the budget amounted to, wrong, but I believe the upfront budget initially was 60,000 Danish kroner. And we actually also developed a reduced version, right? So, of course, also with the reduced biodiversity impact, but we wanted to make sure that just because the budget is too high, we don't, you know, kill the project altogether. And so we devised a reduced version that was, I think, you know, about 50% lower in terms of costs.
Before I move on to Michelle to talk about that aspect, because that's really interesting, finding out from an investment point of view how sports can approach this. But Matilde, Lorenzo talks about having, you know, one budget and then a reduced budget, but at the same time accepting that with a reduced budget you'll have a reduced impact on biodiversity. And a lot of sports will have a small amount of budget for sustainability projects. You know, how did you go about assessing and making decisions about budget and impact?
It's very complex, and I think that in our field, especially conservation biology, limited budget, it's always a problem. Yes, we have to deal with it very often, and I think what is really important is to have a clear idea of what is really important while assessing conservation plans, is to identify what are the priority measures that have to be taken, what are the most urgent needs, and what is optional, and what can be eventually be done in another moment, what is kind of super, additional. And also what is important to consider, I think, is that very often some measures do not have to be economic, financially very consuming, meaning that sometimes also reducing or some management measures, or even concentrating on a few measures which are very effective, it's very often better than trying to focus on too many aspects.
Okay, that's interesting. So prioritization is one thing to look at, but also maybe a more staggered approach. So starting with the priorities and then building up little by little if you get some more budget. That's really good. That's really good advice for our audience. Thank you, Matilde.
Can I add something also, Matt?
Sure, Federica.
Lorenzo talked about that he had some conversations. They had some conversations with foundations, and maybe this is particular for Denmark. I know that we're one of the countries where the big sort of philanthropic foundations fund a lot of sports initiatives and also civil society initiatives in general. But when I talk to these foundations, their focus very, very much is shifting towards sort of these ESG aspects of the projects that they're funding. So they're becoming very aware of this. And this is also one of the things that I use to kind of motivate the sports federations to, you know, to kind of build this into their activities and into their projects. So whenever they actually you know, apply for funding to do a project, then they need to be very clear on how is this contributing to, for example, biodiversity or to, you know, to climate reductions. So this is becoming also more and more a requirement for projects that you can actually say this. So even if you're like rebuilding your sports facilities, to actually consider to talk to biodiversity experts about how can we actually then use this as an opportunity to increase the biodiversity and then include that in your applications, so that it becomes part of the project from the get-go, is I think it's a very good way to go about it.
So that's a really interesting point, Michelle. And after Lorenzo was talking about budget in sport, finding budget for things that are not core can be very difficult sometimes. How do you find that with regards to your sustainability objectives? Are you finding that you're able to create some extra budget for that? Are you finding that looking for foundation support from foundations is going to help you achieve that? You know, what's your approach to that?
We'll look into the funds for sure, but and then we'll see in our economy, we'll see in our budget is there something we can do. Sometimes we will do some work from here to do the sustainability after the project. We talked about taking a day out and go help one of the clubs to get going with some sustainability. So we will look into funds and look into budget in our own budget. So both.
Well, one of the other things I wanted to ask was, we talked about a few stakeholders like the municipality and other important people who are in institutions that would be involved or linked to a project like this. And one of the questions I wanted to ask was around the fans, the people who turn up to watch the race at the track. You know, if you were to put a biodiversity project like Lorenzo's project in place, and you started to cultivate lots of wildlife and lots of vegetation, how obvious would it be to people coming to the track that this was happening? And, you know, what kind of response do you think that they'd give?
Oh, that's a difficult one. Yeah, it is. So I think. Some of the people is aware of we are a sport that is not sustainability, so we have to look other ways. So we have many electric cars now and stuff like that. But this is you can say not something you do in motorsport. So I think it'll be interesting, but I'm in the beginning. But I also think there will be someone will think it's great. But yeah, it will. I don't know, actually.
what do you think, Lika?
Yeah, but I like Lorenzo's team also had built into kind of their plan to create signage to actually explain what they were doing, because this is also an aspect of educating both the fans, but also, of course, the children coming to the track. So there's a great opportunity to use a project like this to also just increase the general awareness in the public of what is possible, what is necessary, why isn't just a plain, you know, grass field good for biodiversity? How is this different, you know, and how many species have we found? And they could actually track, like, from year to year, hopefully the, you know, the biodiversity will increase more and more, and they could kind of actually have like the schools doing projects to track this and document it and then communicate about it. So I think it's really, for the world of sport, our real, you know, opportunity and responsibility in terms of sustainability isn't so much, of course it is to reduce our own footprint, but more than anything is to reach our fans and to make it part of the sporting culture that, of course, we take care of the planet that we're doing sports on. So I think that, you know, this is like the multiplicity effect that we actually have the opportunity to kind of affect the hearts and minds of the people who love sport. But then when they see something to do with sustainability in relation to the sport that they love, they will take it in a different way than, you know, if the communication came from somewhere else. So I think that communicating the efforts is a really big part of it.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, Rieke, because I think one of the things that I found in your report, Lorenzo, was you talked about, so we talk about this mixture of social and environmental, the school children coming to learn and be educated about the biodiversity aspects of what's happened within the track. But I think within the report, you talked about the fact that it was quite fundamental to have school children coming to take care, maintaining the area from a practical point of view as well, because in some cases the municipality can't provide resources to maintain it. So it's not just a sustainability aspect, but also quite a practical thing as well.
Oh, in that sense, yeah, exactly. No, it was kind of a win-win solution that we hope that it's going to work, and we really tried to validate through discussions with our experts and partners. But yeah, exactly. So not everything can be done by school children, right? So that's why the maintenance cost is not zero, but some things can, and that can both drive down the cost, but also involve the kids.
So Lorenzo, what is the next step in the process? You mentioned at the top of the episode that you're waiting to hear back from the municipality about whether this would be allowed. Would it be a case now of trying to move on to implementation of the project and then widening that out to a bigger biodiversity strategy for Dasu? What's the next steps?
Next steps are that we handed over the project to Michela. I mean, not handed over. She was involved from the beginning, of course, but we gave her the report. We gave her and Dasu the report, the budget, and all the detailed things. We think that the project is going to concretely start at the beginning of the next school year, so only in September, because partnering up with schools to do things is very difficult to do while the school year is running, which is why we have quite a, which is why Dasu has quite a bit of, time ahead to prepare, to get funding and so on and so forth, so that, the project can start in September. And we hope that then, all the learnings can help to make the project, to expand the project in other racetracks as well in the future.
Michela, from a practical point of view, what's next for the project? Lorenzo mentioned that you'll be taking more or less control of the project. What are your hopes and aspirations for the project?
Actually, I already used the project just like a few steps. What can the club do to on their racetrack to do some more sustainability? And then the next step, that's just like Rikke said, just something I hand give them, but I'm not there to really help them. So you have to, because it's volunteer, so you have to be there to be an inspiration in the first to get this project going. So now we will seek funds, like Lorenzo said. Nordea has already said this is a interesting project, and we will definitely could search for the funds at them. So, and I actually also just come across the municipalities that has a fund, Copenhagen's for biodiversity in the moment. So that one I will also look into. And then the budget Lorenzo and his team has done is it's and all the work in it. It's a lot of help because, we are a little organization. So,
But also from the perspective of the Danish Confederation of Sport, this is an excellent, example of a local sports club connecting with their local communities, and we have a very close collaboration with the sort of the National Organization of Municipalities in Denmark, and they have a very strong sustainability agenda. And one of the agendas that they really know that they need help with is how to mobilize the, the citizens. How do you actually create the, the behavioral change and the awareness change and these kinds of projects where you engage the local sports community in doing this is exactly what they're looking for. So part of our role is also to kind of, of course, keep an eye on our federations and see the things they do, but also promote the work that they do and look what can be scaled and what can we learn from these pilot projects. Because I think when you look at it, it's really not that complicated. It's just, as Michela said, these guys, the teams, the CBF students did a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of finding out, what will it actually cost? What is the step-by-step plan? What does it take? Like little things, like you need to be aware, you need to cut the grass around the trees in the beginning so they don't get completely run over. These are little things that you don't know if you're not a gardener or you're not. So this is so much learning that then we can also share with the other federations that might have similar ideas.
Matilda, you've already given us some really good concrete practical advice on how to put together a biodiversity strategy from a really practical point of view, you know, prioritization, looking at budgets, that kind of stuff. But is there anything else people working in sport or otherwise can take from this project from a practical point of view that you think will be helpful? You know, some tips and advice if they were to create a biodiversity plan or a project for a site, you know, what other things could they be thinking about or implementing?
I would say that in general, collaboration between experts of different fields, it's really essential. Because I said, even within our fields, we are not expert of everything. And so searching for support and help, it's different stakeholders and different expertise. I think it's really important. From a more practical point of view, I would also suggest, okay, look at what type of biodiversity you have, what type of plants, what type of even of grass species. Also grass species are very important. You can find in your small area and try to enhance what you already have. And also looking at different scales. So biodiversity is just not what you can really see on the first view, but you may also have to search a little bit. I think also about insect biodiversity. You have to look a little bit closer to see that actually maybe a very common grass area might be much more diverse than what you think. If you just look a little bit closer,
there'll be many sports organizations who won't have this as a priority topic for them, biodiversity or sustainability in general. You know, what would you say to them to encourage them to start thinking about the process or thinking of getting involved, how beneficial it can be for your organization?
When you press that particular button on me, you know, I can speak for hours, but I think that, no, to me, as sports, we just have to understand that we are deeply embedded within the society, you know, that we serve. And when sustainability and, you know, social inequality or these issues that, you know, that are very important for the societies that we exist in, we need to be part of the solution. At best, we'll become irrelevant, but at worst, we'll be seen as part of the problem. So we kind of have a choice to, if we're going to, you know, be fit for the future, we need to be part of solving the biggest issues that our societies are facing, because otherwise we'll be seen as just, you know, nice to have. And when the real sort of, when it really comes down to choosing what are we going to invest in and what are we going to fund and who gets to stay and go, then they'll be looking at us. And if we haven't done this, if we haven't understood that we need to be part of this, then we might just not survive.
A huge, huge thank you to our four guests, Lorenzo, Matilde, Enrique, and Michela. Hopefully this episode gave you some tips and inspiration for creating your own biodiversity strategy, or at least taking the first few steps. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review and a rating, and don't forget to subscribe for future editions. Until next time, stay well and goodbye for now. Thank you.